flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM with co-host Voss Larikos. Voss, how you doing?
I'm doing okay, Ken. Still trying to wrap my head around that fourth quarter meltdown last week in week two, but hopefully the Ravens can start to get back on the right track here with a tough three-game schedule lined up. Regardless, always look forward to doing this show with you.
Appreciate that. And if you know, despite the hole they've dug themselves, they're favorites in each of the next two games, as it stands right now, against the Cowboys and the Bills. And what's even more surprising is they're still the favorites to win the AFC North right now.
Yeah, that's very surprising to me, especially with Pittsburgh already having two road wins. Vegas just is not buying Justin Fields quite yet. So I don't think that's how I would set the odds, but it's a reason for optimism, at least.
What one of the things you do as a gambler, you do set the odds. You bet your money. It goes in with everybody else's. There's no mythical Vegas standing in the background that's deciding that to do it. It's just a reflection of the overall money wagered. So it'll change over time, but we'll see. This week, a reacquisition of an old friend, Chris Wormley, back with the Ravens on the practice squad. Most recently spent time with Pittsburgh, I believe. Or did he play somewhere else in between?
He played five games for Carolina last year. Five games. Yep.
Isn't that wonderful for him to get a nice vacation down there from any meaningful football for a year? But 3-5 tech, but primarily a 5 when he was here with the Ravens. I like it. I think it's a nice pickup, since I don't think the Ravens really had a good buffer as a 6th defensive lineman. You have the top 5, and there's a big drop off to who they have on the practice squad as number 6.
Agreed. And Chris Wormley, obviously drafted by the Ravens, his best season was 2021 with Pittsburgh, where he notched 7 sacks. I think it's a great depth of the roster move. You know, this is where the Costa really shines sometimes, is continuing to churn that practice squad and bolster the team and try to prepare for any possible, contingencies.
Yeah. And hopefully he's the sort of player that you get 3 elevations out of. Hopefully he's able to play if needed. Hopefully he's not needed, honestly. And there's a significant risk they'll lose a player like him to another team, a veteran lineman like that sitting around on the practice squad. He may give the Ravens an option, you know, before he decides to sign with Arizona or somebody else who needs a lineman, whatever they do. But that day may come. All right. Interesting news out in terms of rookie snaps played across the NFL. It's just an interesting comparison that I noted out on Twitter. The Ravens have had just 55 snaps so far played by their rookies in the first two games. There's only 2 teams in the entire NFL with less. That's the Browns with 16 and the Falcons with 0. Incredibly, that's a bad draft. 0 snaps out of your...
Yeah. Well, the Falcons obviously took the quarterback who's been riding the pine. So I checked it out. Rosengarten had 18 snaps versus the Raiders, 20 snaps versus the Chiefs. Wiggins had 17 snaps versus the Chiefs, was out last week after the car accident. And the only rookie to log anything, to any contribution at all, is Sanusi Kane on special teams. Obviously, two weeks into their rookie year, it's really early to make judgment. But, you know, Eric DaCosta in the past has said, you know, he enters the draft looking for instant coffee, and haven't gotten very much instant coffee quite yet.
Yeah, they've gotten some good play out of Wiggins, so I'm hopeful that that's going to turn around. We have some good news coming up with Wiggins, sort of good news with Wiggins on the injury report coming back. But they're still fifth in snaps by players on the rookie deal, which is the much more significant number in total. So they still have a lot of guys. And the Ravens have been a team that, kind of waits to have players jump into a starting role and whatnot. Linderbaum was an exception, of course, and Hamilton was playing pretty quickly. But it actually took his whole first season to kind of ramp up his playing time. I'm not yet worried, but I'll tell you what. The last picks in that draft, the last five guys were six, right? Walker, Tampa, Ali, Leary, Samak, and Kane. They got zero snaps out of those guys in total. Well, Kane, they've gotten some special teams, but zero offensive defense snaps.
Yeah, I think it might maybe wise to go a little bit more shoot for the ceiling instead of the floor in day three. But this draft's really going to be determined by Adisa Isaac, TJ Tampa, and Tez Walker, you know, and they just, all three of them have been banged up pretty much all summer into the fall now. So that you're seeing the, you know, the effect of that.
Yeah. And Isaac, by the way, some good injury news on him. He's been a full participant the last 2 days. And with Ajabo being limited today, very, very significant possibility that he'll be active on Sunday. So looking forward to that. Looking forward to seeing him play. He looked like a terror when he was out there in that exhibition game against the Falcons.
Definitely.
All right. Now, we got a speculative topic here, and I have discussed this on the other shows, but this was the place to really have this discussion. We just mentioned it on the other shows, honestly. But what about this? We've had seen a three-year decline from Justin Tucker now in terms of his expected points above the league average on field goals and extra points. Now, Tucker had typically been probably an average of about plus 15 for his first, 10 or so years in the league until 2000. Yeah, it would be 10 from 2012 to 21. In 22, he dropped off to 8.5 points better than the league average, then 3 points better in 23. And this year he's in the negatives. I don't have the exact number, but he's missed twice. He's only made 4 out of 6 kicks. Even if they're long, that's going to be, you know, near the bottom of the league. There's three possibilities, or maybe the more. But I can come up with several. The first is a continuity issue with who he's got, whether, you know, he's had more as a long snapper, but I don't really see that as the discontinuity. And then he's had the shift, the big one, from having Cook, the Hall of Fame holder, replaced by Stout. I come back to that one later. And then the third one is Tucker himself is getting older. And you know, he's 35 years old now. At some point, we should expect decline from him, and yet I'm still seeing him kick these bombs in practice when he needs to. It's just, it does not seem to be happening in the game.
Even the best kickers, Vinatieri, Vanderjagt, towards the end, they did, you know, lose some accuracy. I think what we've seen with Tucker, and really the issue is the 55 plus, really, where they used to be, you know, automatic almost. Still seems like he has the distance, just pulling him left here and there. I don't know enough about the mechanics to know whether that is something that Stout is not putting the right angle on the ball. What was that movie with Ace Ventura with the laces in? We're not talking about that kind of thing with Stout. But could it be that there's something there? I think it's certainly possible.
So the question would be, we've complained about the Ravens activations, the desire to get involved with the kickoffs, and for multiple reasons, I think we agree it's not a good idea. You have additional injury risk from the play itself, the yardage gain is immaterial, and then you have a deactivation you have to make often of a non-special teams player that can be painful, for instance, Urban in week one. So the question is this, I don't know what Sam Cook is doing right now. He may be going to law school. He may be doing all number of things that are post-football, you know, good opportunities, enjoying life, whatever it might be. Boy, I'd love to get him back as a holder only.
I thought that he was an assistant special teams coach, at least last year, with the team. He stayed with the team. I'll look that up just to verify. But if there's a way that you can, get back to knocking through those 50 to 60 yarders more consistently, I think it's worth it, especially at the expense of a kickoff coverage guy or a kickoff blocker. That's my personal opinion. As a coach, he is a Baltimore Ravens special teams consultant from 2022 through the present. So he's with the team right now. So that wouldn't be too hard of a move to make.
I think he's actually just been at training camp. I'm not 100% sure of that, but I think that's when they've used him with the cameras and the GoPro cameras. Remember in Stout's rookie year when they were talking about mm-hmm. that. But it wouldn't surprise me if they, you know, kept him under contract. The Ravens will never do this, by the way. It's not something the Ravens will ever really consider doing, and they'll probably point to other things. But if Tucker were to continue to be on a downward trend in terms of his 50 plus yard kicks, or even if it extended into the 40s, I think you've got to look at that before you toss away the baby with the bathwater, which what you'd be doing if you cut or went elsewhere to sign a different kicker. Tucker has a big money contract. Obviously, you have to try and make that work first, and bringing back a player like Cook is probably a reasonable chance to make that happen.
Yeah, I'm sure Justin's disappointed with the way this season started. There was a point in the Kansas City Cincinnati game on the afternoon where Andy Reid sent Butker out to attempt a 68 yarder with the wind at his back, mm-hmm. and then Andy Reid felt better of it and put his punter on the field. But I do think, you know, watching many games this last weekend, there's a lot of kickers out in this league now knocking through 50 yarders. And I don't necessarily think Tucker has fallen back as much as maybe his companions or competition has caught up to him a little bit.
Yeah. It's they almost need a new category to separate the 60 plus yard kicks from the 50, or maybe even have 50 to 55 and, you know, 56 to 60 kind of thing. But mm-hmm. But anyway, they don't separate it that way on Pro Football Reference. Anybody can do it themselves if they knew exactly the length of the kicks, and you actually can get that. Pro Football Reference, by the way, if you don't use it, has a stat head tab that allows you to look at all the field goal attempts for any kicker if you want to. So it's a very useful tool for that, and tells you whether they were, you know, they made them or not, whether they blocked or not, which is a consideration, obviously, length of each one and obviously where it was, the opponent, all that kind of stuff.
It was just a really tough week for the special teams units all the way around. Obviously the Stout punt at the most inopportune time, maybe mm-hmm. probably the biggest shank of his career, I would think. You had a penalty on Chris Board, a penalty on Holman, and then obviously Tucker missed the kick too. It was barring giving up a 80-yard return or something like that, one of the worst performances of a special teams unit I can remember in the John Harbaugh era.
Yeah, it was quite bad. I mean, they've certainly had some bad games in the past. If you go back to the Ravens game against Tennessee in the playoffs in 2000, after the 2000 season, in January of 20 mm-hmm. of 2001, they had two punts blocked in that game. And they also blocked two field goals. One of them returned famously for the touchdown by Anthony right. Mitchell, but then Tennessee missed a bunch of field goals. That game was largely determined on special teams by missed opportunities.
Well, the other marquee probably of the Ravens championship lore, Maha Miracle game, they gave up two kickoff return punt returns to Trendon Holiday, and then Tucker put through the game winner in overtime. So yeah, special teams. That's funny that both their two championship runs both have a special teams game in them.
There you go. There you go. All right. Let's see. What else do we want? Let's talk about a new topic that came up. And now Brian McFarland rolled this article. Great, great work by Brian just to locate this article, which came from ESPN. And it talked about cap insurance that is now being used by NFL teams. So apparently, and this is shocking to me that I did not know this. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you didn't know it either, Voss, right?
No,
we're both completely in the dark on this.
Yes.
And we're people who keep up with rules like this that matter. I don't know, you know, Brian McFarland, you know, if he knew about it before, but he highlighted this article, which was great. In any case, apparently it is possible to buy an insurance policy on a player. In case they get injured, you get a refund of cap value. Now, let me tell you, mm-hmm. to talk a little bit more about how this works, because, you know, I'm an insurance guy, and it's surprising to me. So if you are paid a claim because a player misses time, and obviously the policy is going to have the conditions on how much time they have to miss and whatnot, then you can get a refund of cap dollars, and those are treated under the CBA as refunds from players.
Yep.
Okay. Now the player doesn't have to pay any of that money. That's a third party insurer who's refunding that money to the team in that case. And it's credited to the following year's cap. So for example, in theory, if you were to insure Aaron Rodgers last year and he's out after four snaps, you might get most of his, I assume, base salary, but it might be limited. Most disability policies are to a percentage of salary returned and might be 80% of that. Might be only for games missed. So Roger, the game where Rodgers played four snaps, he doesn't get a return for that. So the Jets might have gotten a very significant return on Aaron Rodgers. I am told they didn't have insurance on that.
Right. According to the article, they could have purchased a policy between $1 and $4 million and would have gave them a credit of $22 million. So
wow.
Yeah. And apparently Green Bay had it in place when they traded him and the Jets just didn't pick it up or transfer it. So yeah, apparently the Ravens did not do this for Ronnie Stanley and in Brian's words got burned for it, but mm-hmm. they have done it with Marcus Williams and Lamar Jackson, at least that we know of. And Marcus Williams, they have received credits both of the last 2 years of, you know, almost $1 million, I think it was, or 800,000 or so per occurrence.
Now, Marlon Humphrey would be another player. The question we'd have to ask the question about, but he might be a guy you'd want to have a policy on, given the size of the cap hit from him. But it's very interesting. Now here's the flip side of it is this: the premiums you pay for this policy, the $1 to $4 million, as Voss mentioned, that apparently is not cap dollars.
Mm-hmm.
I'll repeat that. That's not cap dollars. Doesn't make any sense.
That's the loophole. That's the trick of it. So you could pay into something without having it hurt or affect the cap. But then if you suffer the injury and you collect, then it does be credit back to you on the cap. So, you know, the way that the author, you have the ability to use cash to buy cap space.
Yeah, that's right.
So
if you were Jerry Jones, And maybe he's the wrong example, but the Cowboys make a ton of money, and I consider Jerry Jones as being extraordinarily wealthy relative to a number of other owners. But there might be two or three owners that are richer than him even. Mm-hmm. If I'm treating this team as my toy, I'm buying insurance on the entire team.
Mm-hmm.
And it might even be cheaper that way to go to a single. The other thing that is really interesting to me is who's the counterparty in this? Now, normally there could be insurance companies that handle large disability claims because there's people who handle doctors, $1 million a year kind of surgeons and whatnot that need to be insured, and they will have problems that come up with their hands and whatnot, and they may mm-hmm. have to miss work, or they may be done as surgeons and have to become a teacher, in which case that policy will pay off until they're 65, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. Those policies can be really large and have very high premiums associated with them. I'm wondering who's doing this kind of disability insurance. Is it insurers, or is this a hedge fund like investor?
I know from a college perspective, where say a player was a redshirt sophomore and he had to go back to school for his third year so he could become eligible for the draft, and he was expected to be a top 10 mm-hmm. pick. Most of those were underwritten by Lloyd's of London, to my knowledge. So that was anecdotal there, but I would assume they're probably still pretty much involved in that. It is a corollary marketplace, I would imagine.
I'm sorry, what kind of marketplace you said?
Just correlated. So if you're insuring college players against insurance, you're probably doing the same for pro players.
Yeah, could well be. I would think there'd be similarities to other groups. I would think actuaries are involved in trying to calculate these risks and price them. I am shocked that this thing exists. And apparently the teams that are using it know they're deriving an advantage from it and are very secretive about talking about it. They have no interest and no gain from talking about who's insured on their team. And, they asked somebody, I don't remember who it was, whether it was Watson or whether it was the Browns about Watson or some other case, if some player was insured and they just didn't return the phone call as part of this article. But it's a great article out there on ESPN about the use of non-cap dollars for insurance, and definitely right up the alley of this. I appreciate you catching that one, Voss.
Yeah, caught my eye. I thought it was a good place to discuss over here.
All right. Now, the Ravens are 0-2. I think that there's a lot of reasons, in my opinion, not to press the panic. Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium, 100% federally legal THC directly to you.
I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Button right now, and we've covered that on other shows, so we're not going to do that again on Friday Morning GM here, but let's take a different tack here and say the Ravens go to 0-4, 0-5, and the trade deadline is approaching. One of the questions we got asked was, who could the Ravens possibly trade if they become sellers at the deadline? Not just like baseball, in truth, there's many fewer players you could trade, but.
So the way I approach this, and personally, I'll just off the bat say, if the Ravens do find themselves in a big hole before the deadline, I don't want to try to contend for a wild card. I would rather try to clear some cap space and pick up some additional picks and try to get back on the right side of, building up a stockpile of ammunition to use for future seasons. The obvious two to me are, well, there's basically two categories, UFAs or impending unrestricted free agents and potential offseason cut candidates. Mm-hmm. So the two UFAs that jump out to me are Brandon Stevens, who they probably have a replacement for in Wiggins, who is unlikely to be re-signed this offseason, I would imagine, and who's also still playing on a rookie deal, so it wouldn't be too much of a, accelerating the bonus proration from his rookie contract as a third-round pick would not be too significant. I'll go one at a time, so that's my first one.
So anyway, he's a great choice, by the way, and he would be one that you could really get value potentially in terms of what you're trading for him. And in particular, what we would call in baseball a second division team from the 1950s, the other way. But if it's one of the teams that has a lot of trouble finding talent on their own in the draft, getting a guy like Wiggins and Stevens and trading a third round pick for him, say, and it might not be that good. It might be a fourth round pick, but whatever it is.
Yeah. I could see a fourth.
Yeah. That you would get some draft capital in return for him. The Ravens would have to be sure that they were moving on in terms of their cap strategy, which I think they could be by that point. And it's not because Stevens would have played poorly. It might be because Stevens has priced his way out of Baltimore. And it could be because Wiggins has played his way into a long-term role and they still want to keep Humphrey. So there are multiple reasons why they get there, but he's a great choice.
Mm-hmm. The other one for me that's impending unrestricted free agent is Ronnie Stanley. He obviously restructured his contract. The Ravens presumably owe him game checks, not necessarily bonus from years ago, depending on the way they restructured that. And he, but if he continues playing at a high level, could probably net you a top 100 draft pick, I would imagine.
There could be value there, and there could be a way to manipulate money to make it work from the Ravens' perspective, and they certainly could get draft capital. He's got a big cap hit this year, which tells me that they might have to accelerate void years into 2024, which might not work for the team. So okay. They're close to the line right now, and if they have to take, it looks like about $7 million in dead money for 20 on 24, that might be difficult to do. They'd have to restructure somebody else to do it, which, by the way, might be worth it if they got a significant draft capital for Ronnie.
Yes.
But yeah, everybody, there's always somebody who needs a left tackle at that point.
That's where I was coming from. I mean, it's a scarce position. He's playing at a high level so far this year, and if they're not going to be able to re-sign him and they don't have a chance of making a postseason run, I would consider it, and you've got to be very careful about how to protect Lamar Jackson through the remainder of the season under that scenario. But the thought would be intriguing under that doomsday scenario.
Right. And we're only talking about a nuclear scenario here where the Ravens are so far out of it. And even if the Ravens were 0-4 after these next 2 weeks, they're still not out of the AFC North race. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Bengals are 0-2. They'll have the Bengals up the next week. The Bengals will be at best 2-2. You know, it's I just don't see them as being out of the AFC North race, even 0-4. And I think, didn't the Steelers come back from 0-4 to make a playoff run? I'm not sure if they made the playoffs or if they just came close 1 year. But they might have finished 8-8.
I remember the Bengals being the slow starters lately, who seemed to catch their stride in October, November. I mean, the way this last week went, you know, it's a week-to-week league, like John Harbaugh says. But if you are dropping game after game after game, you have to consider that at some point.
Right. I'll give you two more, and I think these guys are pretty similar in nature because they are both unrestricted free agents at the end of the year, and they both have a very similar cap hit, and they were both cut candidates during the offseason, is Patrick McCary and Patrick Ricard. Either of them are possibilities, and you clear a pro rata portion of about $4 to $4.5 million on their salary this year by trading them. Neither of them, I don't believe either of them has any void years or anything. And I also don't believe you'd get very much for either of them. You might get a sixth round pick for either one of them if you're fortunate. Right. And if you did, then you're happy with that, and you walk away from it with a couple million to the good in terms of cap.
Yeah. Agree there. You know, if you can get value for them and they're not giving you the return that you want this year. It's two other players that I just highlight, and this might be more for an off-season discussion, but I think probably the two most likely cap casualty candidates at this point are Mark Andrews and Derrick Henry. Both Mark would either releasing him after this season or trading him would trigger an $11 million in cap savings, and Derrick Henry would be $7 million in cap savings to be recouped for next year. If you could get picks for them, Derrick Henry, I'm a little dubious how he fits right now. And Mark Andrews says Isaiah Likely breathing down his neck for snaps, and Likely makes more of a long-term solution at tight end with his yards after the catch ability.
Andrews is actually on my list of players who could be traded at this deadline because the cap hit for doing so is actually, there's almost no gain. It's right around $1 million, which you have to replace him on the roster. So you don't really get any benefit from cutting mm-hmm. him in terms of caps, but you could get picks. And mm-hmm. if it's his last year and you're not moving forward with him, then I think you go ahead and you make that move if you need to. But you got to be sure. You got to be sure he's a guy you're going to move on from. Obviously, Lamar would not be, I can't imagine Lamar would like that, but they probably would have to consider discussing it with him ahead of time.
Obviously you got to keep Lamar in the loop as your franchise player at this point, but you just don't want to be in a situation where you don't have cap space and you don't have enough talent to make a run and you're just kind of stuck in purgatory. That's I don't want to be there. I think the Ravens were there towards the end of the Joe Flacco tenure, and I don't want to go back there again.
Yeah, I'm in the same place. I've got two other players who are on their rookie deals right now who are potential cap casualties. One is Cleveland, and if they're not going to use him, I mean, honestly, somebody else may just say, look, we'll take our shot with him at this point. And he's – you know, it's not like the Ravens have any future in Ben Cleveland after this year. It's this is it. The other one is a third-year player, JAD, who, if you've got your cornerback situation figured out and JAD still not getting snaps into his third year, I think you could make that trade. I would want to get a little something for him, and it probably is unrealistic, but a sixth maybe might be a realistic mm-hmm. return on JAD. Maybe he only get a seventh, but there will be a lot of teams that need cornerbacks late in the year.
For JAD in particular, I'd entertain a player for player swap. I think you may be able to find somebody that's at a position where you're a little bit thin and the other team's a little bit thin in corner, because I do think he does retain some upside still, and I don't want to sell short on him personally.
Okay. All right. And those kind of deals can be worked out with a three-way deal too. Mm-hmm. If your needs do not exactly match up, then sixth round draft pick player and player can go in a triangle kind of move there.
Yep, exactly.
All right. All right. But that effectively is a player by player, player for player swap. There's not a lot of other vets who can be traded at all without accelerating cap. So this is pretty much about the universe of players who could be considered for trade. Want to talk about the injury report?
Yeah, sure. Why don't you queue it up, because I didn't see the Thursday edition quite yet.
Okay, so the Thursday edition is better than the Wednesday edition, which is good. So Sala is still a DNP both days, and who cares? Okay, Jalen Armour Davis was DNP on Wednesday for a personal reason. Is back as a full participant on Thursday. That's probably the best possible situation. Kyle Hamilton, DNP due to his back yesterday, back limited today. Now, what we do often see with veteran players, I'd say, Voss, is that DNP limited full is a reasonable progression to playing on Sunday. Once you're DNP on Thursday, you're usually done for the week.
Yep. Once in a while, obviously we saw last week with Van Noy. Once in a while, you do have somebody. Kyle Hamilton needs to get healthy. And they say back, it looks like maybe his shoulder's bothering him too. You've not had the impact that you wanted so far this season from him. We're talking about him as a potential defense player of the year candidate a month ago. And he certainly has that ability, but he needs to be healthy. If they have to sit him a game and let him really rest, that I'd be in favor of that at this point.
Yeah, I understand that, and I'd probably go along with it as well. Nate Wiggins, same position as Hamilton, DNP, then limited today, could be on track to play, and boy, could the Ravens use him. It will give them a lot more flexibility with Humphrey.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. You know, I guess you had the whiplash from the car. That's what it seemed, concussion/neck. Seems like a pretty much a car accident whiplash type of situation. Hopefully he's ready to go. Just looking up here to see if CeeDee Lamb, because I know he was questionable as well.
Yeah, he had a foot injury, but I think he's back limited today, was believe I saw. Let me go to it, because it was on a separate spot here. I had that. Let's get rid of that. No, come on. Okay, so CeeDee Lamb today was, limited after DNP yesterday. So he was upgraded. They had a bunch of people. They had some people move limited to full, and they had other people came back DNP to full. Tyrus Wheat, for example. But the big one they've been discussing on the Cowboys group is that Mazzie Smith is DNP for a second straight year, and they're very weak on the interior defensive line. So that's a nice break. Kyle Van Noy back to full practice today. Ronnie Stanley back to full practice today, both after DNPs yesterday, ankle and eye/groin respectively. It's very good to see. And then the best news of all is Adisa Isaac, who is back as a full participant for his second straight day. And we also saw David Ajabo go to limited this week. So it's a real possibility that Isaac takes Ajabo's spot on the game day active roster this week.
I could certainly see that. I hope to see Isaac sooner rather than later. There's a world where they're both activated and one of the inside linebackers is deactivated. Would that be Ross? Most likely Ross. And Harrison takes over as a full-time inside backer, inside backer. Maybe not even full-time. He can still set the edge on early downs. But, you can make those numbers work at linebacker. Excited to see what Isaac can do. And really good to see Stanley after that big game. Then you saw that DNP yesterday. I said, uh-oh. And it was a play early in the game where he was on the ground grabbing, I believe it was his left ankle. And that was concerning to see.
It happened twice. And that was very, very frustrating to see that. I'm sure he wasn't happy about it either. Deonte Hardy limited both days. I don't know if he's going to play this week. I don't know if it really matters. So far, he's been one of the big disappointments for the Ravens to have him basically not involved in the offense at all, just five plays in two games, five steps of offense, that is. I did have a decent return this last week, one decent punt return.
Yeah, I'd like to see him, as you mentioned before, do some of the gadget plays and let Flowers get deep. Because you need those, you can't essentially have three receivers only that are contributing on offense. Last year you had four and a half most games. We'll see what Hardy can do. But we'll see.
It's an odd combination when you don't have as deep a receiving core, and they talked about going to 12 all offseason, playing more of it. And then still you're limited at wide receiver. You have tons of talent at tight end, and you're really not using your heavies. It's really shocking how little of tight ends, fullbacks, and OL6 they've played this season so far.
Yeah, Radcarb came off a low snap share this last game. You have Kolar in there a lot because there's a 12. You want a blocker and a receiver. And I think we talked months ago about it's really hard to make two receiving tight ends mesh with the route trees. And so far we've seen that. You haven't got a whole lot of Nelson Aguilar through two games, two catches for 19 yards total. So, I think they're kind of going through some growing pains on offense right now. They really need to get more play action involved. I personally would really like to see Lamar in a more spread-based offense. I think the spread option offense could magnify his abilities, but that's apparently not the way. I mean, they haven't really went that way any year of his career yet, so remains to be seen.
They also, I don't really believe they trust their offensive line enough to do it right now. So, we do the offensive line. We score it funny because we don't put down 21 or 11. We put 401 when it's four wide receivers, zero tight ends, and one running back. But 401 seems to be what they want to do when they're driving down the field at the end of a game. And they really want that blocker in there. They don't. Typically anyway, you would have Hill or somebody flexed out in a spread offense. It's not like you wouldn't have the running back on the field. They want the running back in the backfield. And Hill, in fact, he played 35 snaps this last week, 15 of them he's used as a pass blocker, 10 times as a set blocker, 5 times as a chip blocker. That's an amazing, and I'm sorry, let me be a little further than that. 30 total times they had set or chip blocks thrown on just 34 pass plays, which is 0.88 per play. Is an unbelievable allocation of your eligible receivers to pass blocking.
That's where it is. You know, people say, well, you know, Lamar Bateman's getting separation, Flowers is getting separation, the passing offense isn't taking off, it's on Lamar. You know, he doesn't have as many options to throw to as most other quarterbacks. And I think that's a point that is lost on some people, some fans.
Yep. All right. Always a pleasure doing this show, even when the Ravens are 0-2. Hopefully they get it turned around this week. Voss, tell folks where they can find your work or talk football with you online.
Sure. I author a daily Ravens news article for Baltimore Beatdown blog, and I am on Twitter X at Vasilis Beatdown, V-A-S-I-L-I-S Beatdown. Always my pleasure, Ken. Thank you.
Update on your restaurant?
Yes, we are hoping to close in soon, aiming for grand opening next month, October, probably towards the end of October. You know how these things go. It always takes a little bit longer than you anticipate, but we're very excited to Fiamata at the Fiamata on Twitter. And you can 2900 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg.
All right, we're looking forward to being out there. Maybe if not on opening night, soon thereafter. And it kind of depend on what do you know what day of the week you would open likely?
Not a Tuesday. Because that's bad luck. Because the Greeks lost every war they've ever lost was on a Tuesday. So really? Probably, yeah. It's an old story. One of my first jobs I had was working at a pizzeria we were opening up a new one. And anyway, that Mr. Pete, the old man, said we can't open on Tuesday. It's bad luck for the Greeks. Probably on a Wednesday. We'll probably do a soft opening Wednesday, Thursday, and then have the weekend. And it's probably what it's going to be. But it's going to depend on some of the inspections and the rate that the county wants to process for as well.
All right. Well, that's Wednesday or Thursday is perfect for football analysts in terms of getting out there and getting their first real time out of the house of the week on a Wednesday or Thursday. But anyway, looking forward to it. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. Please make use of hashtag film study mailbag for all questions, whether offense, defense, or Friday morning GM. We did have one this week, by the way, that I'm going to go to on the offense. I apologize for not getting to it on this show, but we're running long and I'll do it then. Otherwise, this is for Voss Larikos. This is Ken McCusick saying goodbye, and we'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.